Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Call third strike. Chisholm thought it was just off the plate. He has a big argument with Brian Walsh before he leaves the field. Astros hold on to win it 8-7. The Yankees haven't been happy all night long with the strike zone. Chisholm wasn't happy last night with the Jesus either. But the Astros get a much-needed win, and they are now four games ahead of the Mariners with 22 games to go on the season. They pick up a game on both Seattle and Texas. A big win tonight, Blummer.
It was a big win. Just on paper, it was a big win for sure. I still don't know how to feel about it. I feel good. They beat the Yankees last night, but it was Jeremy Peña hits the home run to kind of get the, you know, get the juices flowing a little bit when they're down 4-0. The rally against Devin Williams was a lot of the Yankees kind of stabbing themselves in the foot a little bit. Whatever. Boy, they must hate Devin Williams up in New York. He's got a 5.6 ERA. They traded Nestor Cortez and a bunch of other stuff for him to be their closer. And he's blown four saves this year, and he's got an ERA of nearly six. And he got ejected walking off the mound last night.
Ejected as he was, and he was leaving the game, right? Yeah, that was, he was.
They must hate him up there.
That's like getting fired after you already quit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, well, I quit. Ah, dude.
You're
out of here. Filed the paperwork. You're fired.
Yeah.
I loved it. Just, did it go as the storybooks would tell you you want it to go? Not necessarily. Early, tighter than you want it to be, but they get a gritty comeback. Brian Abreu lets up a home run to Bellinger. That's Brian Abreu letting up a home run is one thing, but then letting up a home run to Bellinger to let the Yankees back into the game, like, that's unacceptable.
It's like giving up seven home runs in one swing. It's terrible, yeah.
So, Aaron Boone, this is where you can have fun, like, regardless of where the Astros or the Yankees finish up this year, but Aaron Boone getting ejected for the seventh time this season. Mm. As far as I can tell, according to Close Call Sports, it's one of these statty types websites that's incredibly hard to navigate.
Yeah.
But as far as I could tell, there's 79 manager ejections in MLB this year.
Okay.
And Aaron Boone has nearly 10% of them.
Jeez.
Yeah. What a whiny just disaster of a long-tenured manager on a team that continues to disappoint year after year after year in the playoffs. And Aaron Boone is out there just leading the charge and guys getting ejected from this game.
Is there a rule in Major League Baseball, like in the NBA, where, you know, like the Draymond rule, where if you get like 16 technical fouls, eventually they're like, okay, you're suspended for a game. You can't just keep piling up. Dude, like, is Aaron Boone going to get suspended? Can he just keep piling up these ejections like this and acting like a jerk?
I would think usually it polices itself by those managers getting fired by their club.
Yeah, that's true.
But as we know, the GM and the manager of the New York Yankees will never get fired.
Oh, no.
They've both got compromising material or something on ownership.
The Steinbrenners, yeah.
Yeah, it's Aaron Boone just, it's management by temper tantrum, and then you wonder why these guys can't perform in the clutch.
Yeah.
It's because of everything that you saw last night.
Yeah. So the Astros fell behind in this one, fell behind 3-0, and then Peña hits a home run, kind of gets things going. They fall behind 4-1, but then they scrap their way back in. They scored runs in the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th innings, including a 4-run deluge in the 8th inning against Devin Williams, and they get the win. Yeah, you know what, Seth? You know what probably numbed this win a little bit for me was the exact audio we bumped in with, because, yeah, like, I watched it till the very end, and Brian Abreu giving up a 3-run home run and putting a guy on base.
To Bellinger.
And then I forget who he put on base after that. After Bellinger hits the home run, he puts another guy on base. It was, he didn't put a guy on base. He's facing Chisholm after that, Jazz Chisholm. And he gets to 3-2 on him and gets a gift of a third strike. He was about to put the tying run on base, but the umpire bailed him out.
Hey, it is what it is. That's baseball. Deal with it, Chisholm.
I don't want to dull the positive of the win here. Are we nervous that Brian Abreu has been a train wreck in his last two outings? Like a train wreck. Really bad in his last two outings.
He's he's like Fromber without the emotional volatility, I think. Okay. It's just every now and then, that's what he's going to do for you.
Okay.
He's not a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool closer, per se. And it is what
he was doing so well, though.
I know, but that's where it goes. Like, he's unhittable when he's completely and totally dialed in. But if he's not completely and totally dialed in, you're gonna have appearances like that.
So you're not nervous about Brian Abreu?
I'm not. I mean, I'm nervous, but I mean, it's just that's. He's your best option at this point.
Oh,
you're not
no
gonna go
question.
Out and trade for somebody. You can't point to a single person that I'm not nervous about on this baseball team right now, including Yordan Alvarez, just because of his finicky hand bone. Sorry to get all technical with the medical terminology, but his hand bone is in a very precarious spot.
I'm feeling good about Yordan. 4 rockets last night, man.
I know. I feel great about it. Yeah. He was scorching it every time he got up there. But he's in a precarious medical situation. Sean, he's a guy that's taken every third day off with a hand injury to rest.
Well,
you know, like it's not like this is this. We still don't know exactly what the hell's wrong.
Yeah, you know, I think between you and me, I'm a little more day to day. You know, like Yordan. Like now, I feel great about Yordan. You are a big picture. This is a compliment to you. Before you get angry at me, this is a compliment to you. I am scared now about Brian Abreu because of the last 2 outings. I'm on cloud 9 about Yordan. You probably as a former athlete are able to take a step back from these things.
No, this is why I thank you for that. I'll accept the compliment, but I believe you're lying a little bit because I can't point to a single time this season where you felt really good about Abreu, even after many of his
That's untrue. No, that's totally not true. I've been citing the tweet that I had about Abreu as a mistake the last few times. That's untrue. That I have been saying for the last... Now, don't do this thing now.
You're going to try to compliment me and now call me a liar.
No. I just think I don't think maybe you heard me when I said these things about Brian. No, I've been saying since Brian Abreu took over for Hader before these last 2 outings, I've been complimenting him every single time. And thus, I am... It's true. Don't do this thing where you go, that's true.
It's a grudging acknowledgement.
No, I've been complimenting him. It's not a grudging acknowledgement at all. It's not a grudging.
Right.
No, I have been saying
I've
nice things.
I've never believed that you loved Brian Abreu.
I don't love him, but I said good things about him. I don't have to love any of these guys.
As you've said good things about Abreu, if I had pressed you in the moment, like, do you feel great about him as a closer? I don't think.
Hader. I'm not going to sit here and say he's Josh Hader, but I had been saying, we can go back and find the audio. I've been saying he's been doing an excellent job.
I know that. I realize that. I just don't know that. I feel like I don't.
Who cares if I love him or not? I'm giving him his flowers, man.
All right, you're a prisoner of the moment. I acknowledge it.
Yes, I am a total prisoner of the moment. And thus, 4 rockets off the bat of Yordan Alvarez last night. That was good to see. That was really good to see. Now I wish he'd kind of. Now we got to work on launch angle. We got exit velo down for Yordan. His 4 hits were like all like 110 miles an hour off the bat last night. It was incredible. Now we got to get that launch angle going so we can hit some of those into the right field seats.
He said that it's the best he's felt both in terms of his hand and how he feels at the plate.
Yeah.
In terms of a judgment and everything, and it makes sense that those two would coincide.
Yep.
I suppose. So I feel good about Yordan. I'm gonna be consistently nervous about his hand situation, and I'll credit the Astros. It's got to be hard to give him that rest as they're doing every few days.
Yes,
but it's like because you don't really seem to know what the hell is going on with his hand, you've just got to be as cautious as possible. So credit to the Astros. I'm gonna give credit to the Astros for something they very rarely get credit for these days. I think they're managing Yordan Alvarez's hand injury well.
In this
moment.
I know there's people out there that are mad at Yordan taking days off with a hand injury.
But what are you going to do?
Yeah.
If they can't figure it out and you don't know exactly why it's gone on this long whatever, you just caution is the watchword, I suppose.
I'm with you on that one for sure. The question is, was last night's win enough to distract people from Frombergate? Did he or did he not intentionally being his own catcher in the chest Tuesday night now. Yeah.
The way I feel about it, and I think I saw Roosh say this. He was arguing with somebody on X, and Roosh on X said something along the lines of, like, you know, whether it was premeditated or not, or whether he meant to bean him in the chest, that it's kind of like when you get mad at a teammate in basketball and you give him a really hard pass. Like, it's just frustrated and angry in the moment. Yep. And you're not trying to injure the guy or anything, but it felt, and this is with a long history of Fromber just having emotional moments or where his emotions get away with him. Like, after allowing that grand slam, especially, he was in a moment where he was just going to be obstinately throw the damn pitch that he wanted to throw.
Yes.
And it, by virtue of his facial expressions afterwards and everything, did he think consciously, oh, I'm going to hit Salazar in the chest plate here? I don't think he did, but I think the most likely thing is that he just was going to throw whatever the hell he wanted to right there.
I 1,000% agree with you on that. And the analogy I would have, and you can appreciate this because I know you used to get into fights with your brother all the time, with your brother Dan. You get into fights with a buddy or a brother, and you are punching each other in the face. You could do some serious damage if you punch your brother or friend in the face in the wrong spot. Like, you could do some life-changing things if you catch them on the button. But you're not thinking about it at that time. You're in a fist fight with your brother or your friend.
That's the exact thing I told the judge after I curb stomped him.
Thank you.
I was like, I wasn't.
That's a little extreme.
I didn't know it was going to do that much damage.
That's a little extreme.
I'll help pay for the dental work.
Yeah.
However, I don't know how much it costs. I'll mow lawns. What?
But it's. I don't think it's a bad analogy, right? Like, I think it's a perfect like the heat of the moment, you do things to each other. That could be very dangerous if it goes the wrong way.
Yeah, by the facial expressions of everybody involved, by it being Fromber, as we discussed yesterday, really, I don't know exactly how it all played out. All I know is that if you had told me before the game that an Astros pitcher was going to have a situation exactly the way it played out, I would have said, like, oh, Fromber, what? I would just, without telling me the name of the pitcher, I knew it was going to be Fromber.
Okay, real quick
if it happened with any of those other pitchers, I think that at the very least, if it was an accident, the pitcher almost would realize it in the very moment, like, listen, man, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Or something. Like, the Astros are trying to tell us it's no big deal.
Yeah.
As meanwhile, like, there's reports about what their locker room was like. We know for sure that the two had to go visit with the manager
afterwards.
That's
the big one. When do you have to go sit with the manager after a miscommunication?
After it was actually no big deal. Yeah.
Like, I literally think Cesar Salazar is lying when he says, I hit the wrong button on the pitch com.
When
I don't think
all
he's
those
telling cross-ups, the truth.
In the World Series, when both teams, in the Dodgers versus the Astros, when both teams were hyper-vigilant and paranoid about sign stealing, and they had all those cross-ups, did we get a single report about, McCullers and McCann having to go have a meeting afterwards because they got crossed up?
No,
I don't
did.
Remember. No.
Hey, real quick, because we got to go to break, take a guess on the poll. Fromber claims the pitch that hit Cesar Salazar in the chest was an innocent mix-up, not intentional. Do you believe him? What percentage of people believe Fromber Valdez?
I think 11%.
Close enough, man. Give him a ding. 7.4%.
Wow, that's low.
7.4%.
Anything below 10%.
This is a David Culley
extreme lopsided.
This is a David Culley approval rate level poll.
90% of that 7% are people that just want to be the opposite of everything.
Right.
So there's really
seven people that believe Fromber.
That genuinely believe that he didn't do it.
Yeah. One of them's Ron the Show Hughley. He was standing on that hill yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Do we have any audio
I think
it?
We might. I'll go check their show email. We've got so much stuff
I'm going to pin him
today.
Down on how he genuinely feels about Abreu as well.
Some people are saying you were gaslighting me in the first segment.
I think I might have been a little bit. Yeah.
No, I've been giving Abreu his props. And I give myself credit. I have been very calm through these last two just completely horrific outings by Abreu.
The text line is really doing in my next strategy that I was going to use in the gaslighting, where I was going to say, Sean, this is what everybody says. Everybody says that you don't really like Abreu. Everybody tells me. This is what everybody's saying, Sean.
The populace. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday here. We've got a lot to get to on the show. Jonathan Alexander had 10 bold predictions for the Houston Texans this year. There's a few of these I really like. We'll also rate the boldness of a few of these. For Jonathan Alexander, friend of the show. We love Jonathan. We'll go through that coming up next. Yeah, I just listened to the audio during the break of the toss yesterday between In the Loop and The Drive. And Lopez and Ron were going at it pretty good. So we will play that. Maybe we'll play that at 7 o'clock today on the show. That was good stuff. If we want to circle back to Frombergate, you know, that's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think
Frombergate.
So. Frombergate.
This is something that's going to keep... it's going to play out over the course of the next couple of months, man. The Astros are likely going to be in the playoffs. And this entire season has just been more like the bad version of Fromber when it comes to erratically emotional things he's done and said.
Yep.
It's in a season when finally you get Yordan back, but then also he had another pitcher injury now in Spencer Arrighetti. We didn't really touch on that.
No, we didn't. Did you see Jake Meyers fouled a ball off his foot last night at Sugarland? it goes down in a heap. I think he got back in the box, but he was taken out a short time after that. So, yeah, Arrighetti to the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation. What could go wrong?
I think I've formed the calluses that a general in wartime does.
You
understand that there's going to be losses along the way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to start thinking about these players as numbers more so than human beings.
It's crazy, man. Every year it's been this way the last two, three years.
I'm like a big box retail store, where I'm like, okay, there's going to be a certain amount of shoplifting.
Theft. Right?
Yeah, you just can't do anything about it. You got to manage it as best as you can, but we can't fixate on it all the time.
Arrighetti is shoplifting.
Yeah.
I
just don't want to get to the point where I'm a modern drugstore and I'm just letting people waltz out the door.
Yeah,
exactly. Did I tell you I was witness to one of these things?
No.
I was at the CVS there at the corner of Kirby and 59, and it happened so fast, I was just kind of confused. I was near the exit, and I was going down to... I was tying my shoes, and all of a sudden, I heard like a little rustling at one of the electronics stands near the cash register, and this kid kind of just jogged out the door in front of me, and when I looked up, he was jumping into a car, and they were taking off.
Wow!
And there were two like customers like looking around like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
I could have been a hero, Sean. I could have tackled the kid. Yeah.
And instead?
I could have tackled him.
You could have. Big chance.
And then gotten sued. Yeah. Right. I could have tackled the kid and been a hero and then gotten sued for everything I had.
The irony would be if he hired Mo Karam to defend himself. There you are doing commercials for the very firm that is suing you. All right, No, it's a type of law. I get it. Predictions by Jonathan Alexander. We're not going to get to all 10 in this segment. That's impossible. But there are a few of these here. Now, some of them, like the first one, C.J. Stroud will have an improved season. Okay. I agree with that. I don't think C.J. Stroud's going to go backwards this year. Nico Collins stays healthy and records career highs across the board. I feel like those things go hand in hand. If Nico Collins stays healthy, he will definitely get record career highs across the board. Although he was... 1,300 yards a couple years ago, missing three games, is pretty sporty. So far, so good. Derek Stingley will be all pro again. Boy, I feel like some of these are just predictions on health, you know?
Prediction on health. And also, I'll credit Jonathan Alexander for, you know, I feel bad for people when they're tasked with these. Hey, make 10 bold predictions, because
10.
That's the classic kind of stuff that gets clipped and aggregated, and all of a sudden it gets presented as like, oh, this Yahoo is saying this crazy stuff. I think Jonathan's an actual journalist, unlike the rest of us, and I think he kept these as actually bold predictions, but very, very possible.
Yeah, I think there are a few in here that are truly are bold. Like, I think Stingley will be all-pro again is a bold prediction. There's only two all-pro corners in football. He can have a great year.
But it's not out of the realm of possibilities.
Oh,
you know?
No.
Like Mike Tannenbaum was doing one of these segments when he said the Titans were going to win the AFC South.
It's
super competitive.
Yeah.
I mean, I think with Stingley got the recognition last year without having the defense yet be at that kind of... In the offseason, people have reassessed things, and I think nationwide, the Texans defense is getting a lot of respect.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... this year, it's if there's any letdown defensively at all, or if the team doesn't do well, I think it's going to be harder for Stingley to get it again. Like, the defense has to take another step forward for him to get this recognition.
Unless he
again has
eight picks or something like that.
Right.
You know,
And that's the hard part, too. As the defense takes a step forward, there's a good chance Stingley has fewer picks just because he doesn't get targeted as much.
That's why I think your premise is spot on. because the defense, I think Stingley will have less than five interceptions this year, unlike the last two seasons where he's had five in each of them. So the defense needs to be one of those defenses that if you're a good player on that defense, you get the benefit of the doubt, you know, All-Pro and Pro Bowl voting, that kind of thing.
I think there's one thing, though, too, that I think Stingley probably travels with the best receiver more this year because one of the things that's hard when you have a guy travel with the best receiver is that, yes, it's challenging for Stingley to do that, but then when you're a rookie cornerback like Kamari Lassiter, all of a sudden you have to play on both sides of the field. Mm-hmm. You have to make a lot of adjustments on the fly. This year, Kamari Lassiter, with his experience, I think is going to be even more comfortable
doing that.
So it allows Stingley to travel more often.
Yeah, Lassiter's up to that assignment, I think, for sure. Who does he travel with this weekend, Stingley, if he's traveling?
You can't just pick Davante Adams or Puka Nacua.
They're both really good.
I think it's going to be a case-by-case scenario, I think.
I just want to hear D'Amico scream again this year.
Hey, that's All-Pro! All-Pro! For my man, Sting! All-Pro Sting!
All-Pro Sting! Yeah.
They might do some things, too, this year where maybe Kamari Lassiter, you know, you could have a rule where if Davante Adams is in the slot, that's where Kamari Lassiter is going.
Yeah.
You can mix and match your strategy for doing all of this stuff.
Yep. The two that are concerned, I'm kind of skipping around a little bit. I'm not going in order. The two that I go, okay, I hope he's incorrect on these. Running game will struggle. Offensive line will be so-so.
Right.
Now, so-so means average. I'm okay with that.
So-so is a step forward.
Huge upgrade over last year.
It is. D'Amico yesterday, he kind of got frustrated and said he's just tired of talking and answering all these questions about the offensive line. And at a certain point, I was like, well, I mean, you did swap out four of them and fire you let go of, or the offensive line coach is no longer employed and you fired the offensive coordinator. So it wasn't him being frustrated that people are asking him the question. It's that he himself knows that this is what we've been thinking about and talking about all offseason long. They just got to go out and prove it on the field.
Yeah.
I had the same feeling yesterday during the press conferences where you just get to the point where you realize, okay, these guys have all been asked these same questions over and over again because there's only so much you can talk about until there's actual football.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm very, very excited to just come. Please, yes, tell me whether the offensive line looks like A, so-so, B, atrocious, or C, wow, even better than I hoped for.
Yeah, to D'Amico right now, when it comes to the O-line, the media is, are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Yeah.
Are we there?
Yeah.
We're the kids in the backseat asking if we're there yet. Will Anderson Jr. will contend for Defensive Player of the Year. I am here for that because we will hear this.
That's Defensive Player of the Year right there. Defensive Player of the Year.
That's right. Now, he was saying that to Danielle Hunter, D'Amico, but I could see him walking up and getting up in Will Anderson's face after a couple of sacks. Defensive Player of the Year right there.
Like any good parent would, he should pit his children against each other
Stingley,
to teach them a competitive
Stingley
drive.
Stingley Hunter and Will Anderson.
And start like after the game, be like, I don't know, Will. Stingley had a good game. I don't know.
Yeah.
He might be my favorite child this week. Yeah.
We play this.
Looks like he's Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know about you, Will.
We play this little game in our house, and we got three siblings. We call it Peyton, Eli, and Cooper. Which one's Peyton? Which one's Eli? And which one's Cooper?
That'd be an awesome.
We should play
that'd be
that.
An awesome sign to have, a chart to have in the locker room.
That should be our version of Kiss, Marry, and Kill.
It'd
be,
yeah.
It'd be Peyton, Eli, and Cooper. We should do that as a segment.
Would then, you rather be Peyton or Eli? In life.
In life, I think I'd rather. Boy, that's. I can't believe I'm thinking about this right now because the canned answer should be Peyton. He's
it
great at everything he does.
But let's be honest with ourselves.
But they've made the same amount of money playing football. Like, so there's no different. Like, they've made about the same amount of money playing football. They're doing all the same things now post-career.
Same number of Super Bowl victories.
Same number of Super Bowl victories. And I feel like Eli's done it in a way. Like, I feel like Peyton's done it in a way where people still remember all of his failures. The people remember the failures of Peyton Manning more than they remember the fact that Eli Manning was a 500 quarterback in the regular season throughout his entire... You know what, Eli? There's
Eli,
way less pressure.
Eli.
There is way less pressure being Eli Manning.
There is, there's a give and a take to having extreme success. And to have extreme success and be genuinely happy, it's very, very, very rare. When I say extreme success, I mean people who are at the absolute pinnacle of everything that they do. And Peyton's a lot closer to the pinnacle than Eli is. And yet Eli... Sean, I can tell you just from that event that I did with them at Texas Children's a couple years ago. Yeah. All right, Eli. Eli is enjoying life.
No
man.
Pressure.
Yeah,
Peyton's carrying things, man.
I got the itinerary beforehand, and Peyton's itinerary was like he had this appearance in Florida. He was going to fly in. He had 4 hours, 3 minutes, and 27 seconds in Houston, and then he was off to do some other responsibility. Eli's itinerary was commercial flight. From New Jersey.
No.
Get in the night before and then show up at the event 24 hours later.
Your life is a vacation, dude. It's liberating. Yeah. It's liberating to be Eli Manning. I'm glad we had this talk. This is an interesting one. I'm going to get to a couple more of these. Jonathan Alexander's bold predictions for the Texans in the Chronicle. Go out of your way to find it. It's a good piece. Tytus Howard will move back to guard. Tytus Howard will move back to guard, and I think the premise is that first of all, there's been shuffling on the offensive line every year because of injuries. Yeah. So it's not supremely bold to say that just because if a tackle gets hurt, all of a sudden that sets into motion all kinds of things now involving Blake Fisher and how do they blah blah blah. But Ed Ingram, what's your concern level? Because Jonathan said we don't know if Ed Ingram is good at this point.
Well, we don't honestly. This is the part that concerns me about the interior offensive line in general and. Every time I start reeling off the names of the Rams defensive linemen, I leave somebody out because there's so many good ones, that including their outside linebackers. But I think that we don't know. I think the scheme is going to be better. I think they're going to run the ball better. There's a lot of things just from a discipline standpoint and a technique standpoint that looks a lot better already compared to training camp last year. But when push comes to shove, guys at times have to just win their individual one-on-one pass rush reps.
Yeah.
And I've got concerns about all three guys in the middle right now. Jake Andrews has played 70 snaps in the NFL. Ed Ingram got benched last year. Laken Tomlinson is at the on the downside of his career and gave up a lot of QB pressures and sacks last year. So I think there's a really good chance that at some point Tytus is going to have to replace one of the guard positions, and not to mention just the injury factor as well.
Yeah, I mean,
I think the health of Trent Brown and the development of Blake Fisher, and then also obviously Cam Robinson goes into that.
Yeah, those are definitely things to watch. The last two here, Texans will host two playoff games, and then the very next one, Texans will lose in the divisional round again, this time at home.
Jonathan.
To the Buffalo Bills. Well, I do think the key to them getting to new heights, as D'Amico Ryan said in his post-game or postseason press conference last year after the loss to the Chiefs, I do think they need to be the one or the two seed. I do think they played in the divisional round six times, and they've been on the road all six of those games. That's not a recipe for having a high probability of getting to the AFC title game. I think they've got to stop. The key to them, it sounds weird to say, the key to them getting to an AFC title game is stop losing games that you lost last year where you had like a 1% chance of losing that game.
You want to get the Baltimore Ravens at home.
Yeah. Like Christmas.
Yeah. That'll be like Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, which is true. You've got a better chance at home than on the road.
Well, especially this team. They've created a nice home field advantage for the defense.
Look, as far as their home field advantage with this defense, any quarterback who isn't named Lamar Jackson or Will Levis has turned to mush in that stadium.
Yeah.
They likely won't see Will Levis this year. So, hey, check that one off the box.
Yeah, that's right.
If they want to see the Ravens at home, it's going to have to be in the playoffs.
That's right. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Hey, that football talk in this segment on Sports Radio 610 presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Headlines are up next. We'll circle back to the Yankees and the Astros last night. And the injury report for the Texans. Captains named for the Texans as well. We will get to all of that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Call third strike. Chisholm thought it was just off the plate. He has a big argument with Brian Walsh before he leaves the field. Astros hold on to win it 8-7. The Yankees haven't been happy all night long with the strike zone. Chisholm wasn't happy last night with the Jesus either. But the Astros get a much-needed win, and they are now four games ahead of the Mariners with 20
two games to go on the season. They pick up a game on both Seattle and Texas. A big win tonight, Plummer.
That might be the biggest part of last night's win. Todd Callis on the call there, Space City Home Network. As bad as the Astros have been, they now have a 4-game lead in the division. Like four feels... You know why four feels a little more comfortable? They have a 3-game series with the Mariners coming up in a week or two.
Yeah.
And if they can keep the lead at something where even if the Mariners, I think it's here too, if they come here and they, you know, they do the Astros, you know, they sweep them, if they can have a lead where it's like, yeah, we're still leading the division. We know you're going to blow this thing still, Mariners. Like it's a 4-game, for this team, the way they have hit, and by the way they've hit, I mean how poorly they've hit, especially with runners in scoring position. For them to have a 4-game lead right now in the division is absurd, especially with all the injuries. Half their pitching staff, half their rotation are guys who are coming back from Tommy John surgery or some sort of injury. And now Spencer Arrighetti back to the IL with some right elbow inflammation. Like this team, the baseball gods will not let this team enjoy any of this season at all. There are so many Astro fans that I see going, God, I just want this season to be over. And they are leading the division by 4 games. You know, it's been a rough ride, man.
It's the AFC South, man. The Astros are flawed in a lot of ways this season, and yet they're in the AFC South.
Yep.
So there you go. The Yankees are the leader in the wild card race right now. They've got 77 wins. The Mariners have 73 wins. Mariners and the Rangers are in a Mariners are 1 game ahead of the Rangers right now. 1.5 games ahead of the Rangers right now.
For the last wild card spot. Yeah. So that's
so the Yankees are 4.5 games ahead of the Rangers.
Who's the other wild card? The Red Sox?
It's the Yankees, then the Red Sox, then the Mariners.
Yep. So the
Blue Jays have a pretty healthy lead.
Yeah, the Blue Jays and the Tigers.
Division.
Yeah, in the division, and they're kind of out in front of the Astros right now too. The Astros can still catch them. They got to get their act together here. They did last night in the 8th inning. They scored 4 runs on Devin Williams, the Yankees closer, who's been abysmal this year. And they'll play tonight at 6:40 over at Daikin Park. Try to win the series here against the Yankees. Just keep stacking up series. I don't know if you saw on the broadcast last night, Seth. They showed some of the footage. Isak Paredes has resumed baseball activities.
Yeah, taking some grounders and whatnot.
Yeah. Probably a topic that requires more time than headlines, but I'm really intrigued. If he does get back to being healthy, you got to activate him, even though it would appear it's going to be tough to find a spot for him. You know, maybe Altuve becomes full-time second baseman again and Yordan plays left field and you got Paredes as your DH. I'm a little skittish about him all of a sudden playing second base at the end of the year just to get his bat in the lineup. Like that's...
Yeah.
And reportedly, people within the organization are skittish about him at second base at all. Period.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, man. And yet, you know, that Wells home run last night would have been a home run in 1 out of 30 major league ballparks.
And that's Paredes' specialty. is peppering those Crawford boxes.
That was the stat that came up with Chick-fil-A gate this week, where people thought they were going to get free chicken fingers with Altuve hitting the Chick-fil-A foul ball
foul pole,
but it turns out he didn't.
Yeah,
but you know who has 4 times this year? Paredes.
Yeah, Paredes.
Paredes has basically fed the city of Houston
He's
4 times.
Families, man. Yeah.
But it's a reminder that Paredes in that ballpark is something pretty damn cool.
It's why they wanted him so badly in the Kyle Tucker trade, 100%.
Yeah.
So he was resuming baseball activities. He looked good. He was fielding ground balls. He was reportedly running at about 50%. That would be a good guy to get back for the postseason if you make the postseason this year.
I mean, for Paredes, who, man, all credit to him, because he's rolling the dice. Easily could have justifiably shut it down for the season, gotten the surgery, and then been in really good shape to start next year. Now he risks re-injury, potentially missing all of next season.
Yep.
So if you're going to try to be careful with him and manage it, him as a pinch hitter or something, like just you can get creative with the infield, however you got to do it.
It's a good problem to have, put it that way. Speaking of injury, speaking of hamstrings, we switch over to the Texans. Christian Kirk and Braxton Berrios, both DNP yesterday at practice, both have hamstring injuries right now. Boy, all of a sudden, if Berrios was going to be your kick returner, Seth, and if Christian Kirk was going to be your slot guy, And these guys have hamstring injuries Wednesday before week one. You know, we'll see. Maybe they're limited today. If they start to progress to limited, then you're a little more optimistic about it. But, man, is Jalen Nowell a big part of things all of a sudden? If your slot receiver Kirk and your kick returner Berrios are both out for Sunday's game, Jalen Nowell is going to get a baptism quickly in the NFL.
And this is where I think that if you look at it's things that DeMeco has said about the advice he gives to rookies. This week he said, hey, I just tell all of them to go out and play, don't overthink it, things to that effect. A couple weeks ago, we talked about Jalen Nowell specifically saying, hey, man, just go play football. Don't make it more than it is. Don't go out there and be thinking all the time. Slot receiver is a tough position for rookies because you do have to think a lot. So if they do have to end up relying on Jalen Nowell, it's in week one, I'm not as worried about it because I think they'll have a very defined package for him and they'll try to simplify it as much as possible so he can go out and play. But the Rams won't have any tendencies on that.
No.
If it starts to stack up week two, week three, and you don't have Christian Kirk out there, and you're still kind of limited in what you can do with Jalen Nowell, defenses start keying in on that.
Yep. The Texans named their captains yesterday by a vote of the players. They are C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson Jr. I think you can put those two in ink for the next 10 years as captains of this team. Azeez Alshire, as long as D'Amico Ryans is here and Azeez Alshire is here, he will be a captain. Those were locks. The two interesting ones, Dario Gumbawale and Nico Collins, named captains for the first time for the Texans.
They did the vote. They did the vote, and it's whenever I was a player, it wasn't done this way. But they didn't vote on an offensive captain, a defensive captain, a special teams captain.
Yeah,
they just opened it up to the entire field, and these are going to be your captains. It's not a specific number of offensive or defensive guys or anything.
Which says a lot about Dario Gumbawale, because when I first saw this, I'm like, okay, well, he's like, John Weeks was a captain the last several years, because he was repping the special teams. I'm like, oh, well, Dario, that's a good pick. He's repping special teams. And D'Amico clarified that. Here's D'Amico Ryans talking about the captain vote.
Who do you guys want as captains of our team? It wasn't a position group or a side of the ball type thing. So it was really cool to see, you know, the way our guys voted. I would have voted the same. So, no,
Yeah,
that part there, I would have voted the same. I don't recall him saying that about last year or the year before.
Well, okay, is there a Texans captain jinx? Because last year there were seven captains.
Yeah.
Three of them were Will, Azeez and C.J. Stroud, who are captains again this year. The other four are either no longer with the team or no longer, for now, around the team. Jimmy Ward, who, you know, he's injured and off-field issues. Stephon Diggs, got some good Cardi B audio for later on in the show. Laramie Tunsil, who's rewriting fashion narratives as we speak. I know that because there's a magazine that told us so.
And lots of creepy photos.
And too. Creepy photos. Mm-hmm. And then John Weeks, who they let walk in the offseason. So,
yeah. No, I would say
star-crossed group right there.
I think the one thing last year about Laramie Tunsil being named a captain and people pointing to that as evidence of his leadership importance was more, to me, evidence of the guys on offense really not understanding what the hell they should be looking for. You combine that with C.J. Stroud calling Laramie Tunsil a vet, guy that doesn't do anything extra above and beyond what he has to do. I think on offense, it was a mess last year in terms of their culture. And D'Amico's flat out said it. They needed to make cultural changes on the offensive side of the ball. So that's a set aside from the other ones. Jimmy Ward, A-okay with him being a captain. Stephon Diggs, I totally got it. John Weeks, it made sense.
Yep.
I think that it's more, those are guys, though, that are older guys that were either on the last year of their deal or what have you. Or, you know, John Weeks been with the team for, John Weeks had been a captain before.
Oh, yeah.
Without leaving the team in that year.
Yes.
So, no, he's not a jinx. Yep. That's just something that happened. But it wasn't because he was a captain for the first time in his career or anything.
I feel good about they picked five good ones this year, I think.
Yeah, I would say emphatically no, there's no jinx.
Okay, good. Good, I like that.
I thought the ones last year were good, except for Laramie, because I think Laramie, it was a popularity contest more
Agreed.
Than anything else.
Agreed. Yeah. All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. You can text the show, 713-572-4610. All right, so Frombergate, big topic the last 24 hours or so. It was a big topic during the toss yesterday between In the Loop and The Drive. John Lopez and Ron the Show Hughley dug in on each other on this topic. Ron said that he didn't think there was intent with Fromber. John Lopez thought Ron Hughley was crazy for this. We will have the audio. Who are we siding with on this one? Who have the people sided with when it comes to Fromm Brigade? We've got a poll up on that one. We'll get to all that in the 7 o'clock hour. We are going to do our annual NFL head coach death pool in the 7 o'clock hour as well. Seth and I each pick four head coaches, and we're trying to pick the one that's going to get fired first this season. Seth won last year with Robert Saleh. We'll pick our four coaches in the 7 o'clock hour as well. Stay there.